Never a lack of stories in the world of college football. Pac-12 championship in the rearview mirror. Utah gets the blowout victory over Oregon as they are your Pac-12 champs and are going to their first ever Rose Bowl after joining the conference just 10 years ago. Here to break it down, one of our favorites and about as good as it gets when it comes to covering college football, in particular the Pac-12. John Wilner from the Mercury News and the Pac-12 Hotline joining us. John, how are you?
Hey, John.
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. So realistic expectations, Utah going to a Rose Bowl 10 years into the league. Is that, if I would have said that to you 10 years ago, would you have thought that that would have been possible?
Good question. So yes and no. I would say that I thought it would be, you know, within, it would be realistic, you know, after, you know, five or six. I mean, they were definitely going to need several recruiting cycles to develop the depth and the skill position talent that they were going to need, you know, to win on a week-to-week basis in the Pac-12, right? That's the big thing when you talk about teams jumping up in conferences is winning on a week-to-week basis. So I would have figured, yeah, probably after 5 or 6 years, they would be fully loaded and all those players would be experienced. And then it was just going to be a matter of opportunity, right? I mean, if USC had hired Pete Carroll too, then it would be a different story. But there's been opportunity in the South, and they have taken advantage of it three times now, and you know, earned their bid. That was a terrific performance the other day.
When I started looking back at it, John, it kind of blew my mind that Utah is only the second Pac-12 South team to represent through 23 years, and the other, of course, being USC. Why has there been such a lag in Pac-12 South ability to make it? I mean, I'm only 11 seasons in with Utah, but, you know, going back to 23, what's it been that's kept the South out of contention for the Rose Bowl?
Well, I mean, you know, it was, first of all, I'd say the Arizona schools are just not, you know, Arizona's never been to the Rose Bowl. ASU went in 1996, so they are not as equipped. I would say those schools haven't been as equipped as maybe some of the northern teams. Colorado and Utah just joined the league, needed to upgrade their talent. So, and then you got the north, you know, you have Oregon, which has been rolling now for a long time, and Washington and Stanford. Those three teams have basically controlled the conference other than a uptick from USC every once in a while. So, I mean, it's been a very northern-dominated conference since Pete Carroll left USC, really. I mean, Stanford and Oregon filled that void immediately, and then Washington came along once they hired Chris Peterson.
So, you we haven't had a chance to catch up with you since the Lincoln Riley news. Your thoughts on that, and does that alter the landscape of the – is he the kind of coach that can alter the landscape of and the balance of power in the Pac-12?
Oh, I think he absolutely is, especially at that school. You know, from a 40,000-foot view, it's great for the Pac-12. For an individual team in any given year, it's not good. It makes it harder to win the conference title and the division. Within the South, I think Utah is probably less impacted directly than UCLA and ASU for sure, because Utah's got a little bit different formula. Recruiting base is a little bit different. You know, as long as Kyle Whittingham's there, I think Utah will be in position to compete, even with Lincoln Riley at SC.
Well, you got USC that needs to be powerful, and you've got Oregon that needs to be powerful and needs to be a mainstay. They now lose Cristobal. What are your expectations for an Oregon hiring?
Yeah, I mean, and Washington, too. I mean, frankly, those are the three schools that historically, you know, have done the best last 20, 30 years, and probably mean, you can make the case for Utah, but those three, Washington, Oregon, and USC, are also, you know, the best equipped to kind of build the rosters that you need to make a playoff. So we'll see how that goes. What was the second part of the question?
I'm just curious who you think might fill in that position for Oregon.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. It's been a long it depends on whether stability and continuity is going to mean to them, right? They're about to hire their fourth coach in 7 years, right? And part of that is because they've been hiring coaches who have roots in Florida. And I think for anybody in the Pac-12, if their coach is West, East, you're in real jeopardy of them, once a decent opportunity comes along, of them leaving. So Oregon's got to decide if they want to just chase the biggest name, use Nike money, and try to get the biggest name, even if there's a good chance that that coach is going to leave in 3 or 4 years. Or do they want to make the Kyle Whittingham play, right? Which is hire somebody who you are really confident is going to just keep that job for as long as they're successful, right? And Oregon has options in that regard. There are some good coaches that have roots either in the West Coast or to the university specifically. So it's almost a philosophical decision for them first before you start trying to drill down into the specific names.
Have you heard any, and again, you mentioned that, this is still certainly in the early process, but you got to imagine that Oregon has been preparing because it's been out in the news for the last couple of weeks. Do you think Kalani Sitake's name might be in the mix?
I mean, I could definitely see them looking into him, for sure. Absolutely. Chip Kelly, Justin Wilcox, Kalani Sitake, I think all those guys, Brian Harsin, I would imagine. Auburn is a tough, tough job because of that shadow from Tuscaloosa. So I would imagine Harsin would be interested. All those four guys for sure. The first call, if you're Oregon, your first call has to be Chris Peterson, I think. Even if there's a 1 in 10 million chance he says yes, you got to make that call, right? He was an assistant coach for Oregon for 6 years before he went to Boise. I don't think he wants to get back in, but you certainly got to make the call. And then from there, you kind of figure out where you're going to go. But I would think Stocky for sure will be on their list.
So, John, when you take a step back now and you analyze this Pac-12 season, I know that it was under attack nationally. Everybody wanted to attack it, beat it up, because there was so much cannibalism on the inside. But how good or how bad was this conference this year, in your opinion?
I think it was pretty mediocre. And part of the reason for that is that the cannibalism was from the inside, but also the outside. 1-5 against BYU. 0-2 against San Diego State. Losses to Utah State and Nevada, plus the FCS losses. Right? I mean, the conference, made its bed in the first, 3 weeks of September, essentially, with all those losses. And then when you've got those losses, and then you start playing in conference, and you add losses, all of a sudden teams that could be 10-2 or 9-3, teams that could be 8-4 or 7-5, and those losses add up when you're talking about things like the rankings, right? So I think that the conference was pretty mediocre. I happen to believe that last year took a toll, the COVID season, not playing as many games, not having as many practices as a lot of other schools around the country. I think we saw that in the first couple weeks of this season. Pac-12 teams were not necessarily ready to play, didn't know the personnel, especially the quarterback position as well. And so there was kind of a lingering impact from COVID, I think.
Well, just as a guy that enjoys good football and appreciates good football, what are your thoughts on a Utah-Ohio State matchup?
Yeah, a lot of people think Ohio State is going to, not have a huge sense of urgency because, it's playoff or bust for them. But they got a lot of California kids, including their quarterback and their star receiver, and they're going to want to play well in front of their hometown, their family and friends. So I happen to think Ohio State's going to bring their A game, and it will be interesting. I mean, it's another level. It's a different level of talent and athleticism than Utah's used to seeing, even compared to Oregon, right? I know Oregon won the head-to-head, but, you know, Ohio State's a way better team now than it was then. Utah will have to take a, you know, page out of Michigan's playbook, really, and just try to pound the ball, right? Just try to pound, you know, have Wisenhunt throw 20 times, 15, 20 times, and then just run the ball as often as they can and see if that works. If it does work, I think Utah will has a good chance to win. If Utah can't run the ball, then we're talking about big problems.
So, John, I wanted to ask you about Kyle Whittingham, where he's now got at least a share of, if not outright, four Pac-12 South Division titles, and now he's got a Pac-12 championship title. Coaching for the University of Utah, number one, do you know of any Pac-12 teams that have put an offer out there for Kyle Whittingham? And number two, if not, why wouldn't USC or Oregon or these teams that have $8 million or $9 million or $10 million to throw to coach, why wouldn't they come after a man that has built such a staple program in the Pac-12 South?
Well, I don't know for sure that there's been an actual offer made, but, you know, that's different than back channeling to Whittingham's representatives to see if an offer is made, would he be willing to accept? If the answer is no, then you don't make the offer. I thought SC, and I don't know if there was any contact with them a few years ago when they were thinking about hiring Clay Helton. You know, they had Lynn Swan on the show, so it was not a good scene. But to me, that was the window right then, 2018, 19. If they were going to make a play for Whittingham, that was the window. But I think most of it is everybody knows he's not really interested in leaving, and it's hard, you know, didn't necessarily think he would be, you know, any of those other jobs were better jobs, and you can argue that he was right, that he's got the best job for him. So I don't know for sure about actual offers, but I'm sure that over the years there have been some feelers put out.
Looking in the crystal ball a little bit, I know we're still away from playoff expansion, but obviously it would be fun to see it coming down the pipeline soon. It seems like the hang-up is whether or not P5 teams are guaranteed a spot or not. When it all shakes out, do you think those P5 schools will get that guaranteed spot in a playoff football expansion?
I was thinking yes, but the last couple of days, I'm not sure. I think it's kind of 50-50. You know, the problem is that if they want to expand before the 2026 season, then all 11 interested parties have to agree. So it can get any proposal can get blocked by one conference or by Notre Dame. And SEC has made it pretty clear that they don't think the Power Five should have automatic bids. So and the SEC has got a lot of leverage, obviously. And the SEC would be just fine if they kept it at four. Because they love it. So I don't really know the answer to that. Somebody is going to have to give ground somewhere, whether it's the SEC or the alliance conferences or the group of five. Somewhere there's going to have to be some give if they want to get it, the expansion done for the 24 or 25 seasons. They may just say, you know what, we're going to stick with this until 26. And then once they do that, they don't have to have all 11 on board. They could just, you know, do whatever they want, really. The Power Five could do whatever they want and then see who else wants to come along with them.
Hey, John, does the new Pac-12 commissioner have the autonomy to just say, the 2022 season, we will play an 8-game conference schedule? Or is there a lot that goes into making an adjustment like that?
No, he does not. I mean, that's something that would have to be approved by the schools because it's a structural issue and it involves money. But that said, the commissioner and the schools are in very, very close alignment on a lot of these football strategic issues. The issue with going from 9 to 8 for next year is who are they going to play with that extra game, right? It can't be Idaho State, right? Because ESPN and Fox right now are paying for conference games. You can't take a conference game out and put in a FCS opponent or a Sun Belt opponent and expect that ESPN and Fox are going to pay the same amount. But they will pay the same amount if that game is a Big Ten opponent. So what they are doing is they are waiting to see if the Big Ten is going to go from 9 to 8. And if the Big Ten is going from 9 to 8 next year, and then the Pac-12 will go from 9 to 8, and that extra game just gets filled across the two conferences. The Big Ten will have two other teams that they've got to worry about because there's 14 schools. But that's the issue. They can't, they're not going to drop it to a secondary competitive landscape, right? Because TVs won't pay for that.
How soon before, kind of circling back a little bit on USC, what are realistic, and I'm saying realistic expectations in USC fans in the same breath, which probably isn't the right thing to do. But what is a realistic expectation for USC to be back in a conversation of a college football playoff berth with Lincoln Riley as their head coach?
Well, I mean, if they expand in a couple of years, then as soon as they expand, right? I mean, that team should be, you know, if there's six at-large spots, SC should be in position to claim one of those. I think, like, just in terms of how soon until he's got a roster that can win the conference, you know, with the transfer portal, the turnaround time is a lot quicker, right? You don't have to wait for multiple recruiting cycles and for your offensive linemen to mature into juniors and seniors. You could just go out and get some good offensive linemen. So, you know, I don't know about next year, but I would imagine in 2023, USC probably should be, you know, contending for that conference title realistically. Maybe next year too. I don't know. But the transfer portal has accelerated the entire rebuilding process.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm looking at a Utah State team. I just called a Mountain West Conference Championship. They go to 1-5 to a conference champion. A lot of that due to the portal. So yeah, it can turn your team around real quick.
Absolutely. I mean, look at Utah. You can have quarterback and tailback, right? I mean, that's those guys. You know, I know Rising wasn't an arrival in the past 12 months, but it's like free agency, really is, and it also is challenging for the coaches to figure out, you know, where. Which scholarships are you holding off for transfers, and how are you going to manage your recruiting of high school players based on who you think you're going to get in the portal and all that kind of thing? So it's the roster management has become much more complicated, especially at the quarterback spot.
John, I wanted to just throw a thought at you about Stanford. I'm seeing two Utah products that are leaving. The Ham Mooley kid and the Reed kid have announced that they're going to leave for a grad transfer year. And we saw Stanford finish with seven straight losses and some embarrassing ones, including one to Utah, 52-7. What's going on in Stanford? How bad is it getting? And is it out of control for David Shaw? I know I asked you already, is David Shaw in the hot seat? And you didn't feel it, he was at the time. But how come things are going so poorly at Stanford right now?
You know, they just have not recruited very well. Certainly not at the level that they did, or, you know, 6, 8, 10 years earlier, and especially at the positions that they need the most, which is the lines of scrimmage, right? Stanford is not going to ever, just because of their natural recruiting pool, you know, they're not going to be like an air raid team where they can go out and sign five great receivers. They got to play kind of Utah style, where you got tight ends and fullbacks, and you run the ball, and you play physical at the line of scrimmage. You know, Rick Neuheisel called it football in a phone booth one time. And they don't have the personnel to do that anymore. They've become kind of like everybody else. And I think that that's hurting them because they can't compete being like everybody else. They need to be different. We'll see if Shaw can get it back. I mean, he's not on the hot seat, but, you know, it's certainly not, you know, this was the worst season they've had since before Jim Harbaugh got there.
Well, John, we appreciate your time as always. Thanks for joining us, and look forward to catching up with you again here soon.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, guys.
You got it. Never a dull moment, and John Wilner is always on top of it. The Oregon Ducks need to find a new head coach.